And I have the green light, we're good? Okay, welcome to everyone. Thank you so much for being here. We're going to call to order the meeting, the City Council study meeting for the City of South Jordan. Today is Tuesday, October 3rd, 2023. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I have the privilege of serving as mayor of the City of South Jordan with our outstanding City Council. We have three of them seated here with me. We've got Mr. Harris joining us online. We appreciate you. Thank you. And Mrs. Zander, I think, will be with us a little later. I believe so.
Much later in the evening, I believe.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome to all of you who are here. We appreciate all of our staff who are here, those who are presenting, and any members of the public who are with us or plan to be with us in the future. Thank you. All right, we're going to open this meeting today with an invocation, and it's my privilege to give that tonight. Our Heavenly Father, as we come before Thee, we are grateful for the opportunity to be part of this work, to be here in the City of South Jordan, and to have the chance to discuss plans and programs and options and policies for the residents of this great city. We're grateful for the elected officials in this city, for their integrity and for their hard work on behalf of those who have elected them to represent the interests of them and their friends and family. We're grateful for the professional staff that we have, for their expertise, and for the pride they take in the work that they do. We are grateful to be part of this city and for the many, many good people that we have the privilege of representing and working for, and pray for thy spirit to be with us at this time, that tonight we can make good decisions, that we can listen, and that we can come together and deciding things that will benefit the City of South Jordan now and far into the future. We ask thee to help bless us with vision and integrity and fairness and goodness, and pray for a spirit of civility to be upon every one of us who will participate in either of our meetings tonight. We thank thee humbly for the opportunity to be part of this work, and say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Anybody have anything you'd like to bring up for coordination?
I was just wondering if staff knows what day the Veterans Breakfast is going to be on. I noticed that there's a banner up at Mulligan's, but
yeah,
I couldn't read it as I drove.
It is.
We have typically two. One that's a veterans lunch that's part of senior programming, and then we have one that's put on with the help of Leanne Jensen and some volunteers. I believe that one is the 11th,
is that a Saturday? Which
is a Saturday. Yeah.
Okay. It's actually on Veterans Day, I think.
Yeah.
This year it actually falls on Veterans Day. We can confirm that, and I'll get that for you.
That's right. I think it might be the 4th.
Yeah, if you would get a calendar invite sent, that would be great.
Yeah, it's the 4th.
Is that the luncheon, or is that
the breakfast from 8 to 9:30 in the morning that Luann helps put on? It's the 4th.
Saturday before.
The Saturday the week before from 8 to 9:30. I know she contacted Melanie about that a few months ago. So yeah. Anyway, I believe it's the 4th. If somebody would like to confirm that, but that's not, I don't know if I put it on my calendar, if somebody else did. I did. So if anybody would like to confirm that, that'd be helpful. Thanks.
I'll confirm that. I'll put it in my notes this
Thank
week.
You. Good question. Anyone else?
We're going to have a party on the 16th.
Does that still work?
Works for us.
We all invited ourselves over. Is that a problem? We'd love to have a dinner at the Sheltons. What do you say? Yeah. Is that okay?
Good for me.
Yeah, I think that works for us.
Patrick,
I don't think Patrick knew about it.
Oh. Huh? It's just been up in speculative conversation. We can shoot you a text and see.
The 16th?
Yeah, I was just talking about
Monday night.
6 to 8 kind of thing.
I think that works. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything that would, yeah, that should be fine.
Okay, great. Let's plan on it. Okay, great. Thank you. The Sheltons have graciously agreed after being voluntold that we would like them to host it. So, yeah. Okay, thanks. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Our regular council meeting agenda. It's a reasonably light agenda. We don't hate because sometimes that's nice. Because last time was not, right? So it ebbs and flows, and this time is a little lighter than last time. So we have a proclamation and then a resolution to forward my name on as the city's nomination for a second appointment of Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District.
How long are those terms?
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah, I know. Time's flying.
It's amazing.
It's time
to turn that just expiring now, right?
Yeah.
The first 2 years were with Scott.
And then I've been on it for four, yeah.
Got it.
So second term there, which the city, before my time, worked hard to make sure that our mayor had a seat on that board, so. And then we have a redevelopment agency public hearing about approving the participation agreement for the Southwest Quadrant Urban Center Community Reinvestment Project area.
Pretty light.
Yeah, and then we will go.
Go back.
Back to our work meeting.
Okay.
And we'll have Mr. Doug Young coming to, from Glenmore to come and chat, so. That's, anybody have any specific questions about that? Anything at this point? Nothing until later. We'll have plenty later, but.
Yeah, well, lots later.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's jump in. We are sincerely excited about this. We are happy to be doing this and incredibly grateful for the patience that has been extended to us. We would have much rather been getting an art update last
week. Yes, you would have been much better.
However, thank you so much. We are looking forward to our Arts Council draft master plan presentation. So we're going to turn it to our Director of Recreation, Janelle Payne, and let her take it away. We've got several folks here for that. We appreciate you being here, and we really do look forward to this. We know a lot of work has gone into this, and we're excited to see what it looks like.
Thank you. Like you mentioned, a lot of people put work into it, and we started back in the spring. I think like early April is when we really got going, and we have some members of the steering committee in the room today too. And then Jake McIntyre from Union Creative is back again. And so the purpose of this presentation is to show you the draft of the plan that we've come up with through a lot of community engagement and roundtables and research. Thank you. And I think based on the feedback we've got from you and then community members, people in the art community and staff, we are really excited about getting some, harnessing the momentum we have and going forward in a really intentional way that aligns with our department's processes, policies, our city as a whole, mission, vision, values, and strategic priorities as well. We'll let Jake kind of take it away and lead the discussion, but we really welcome your feedback, and we're looking forward to presenting this for adoption with your feedback kind of implemented into a final version at our next council meeting. So, yeah.
Okay. I think we can pretty well dive in unless anyone has any initial questions. Otherwise, the plan is to kind of, I'm going to walk us through the document, the various steps that we went through, kind of high level. You can stop at any point and we can dive into any individual pages or sections if we need. Otherwise, we'll just zip our way through and then we can come back to any questions that may come up. But yeah.
Please forgive me, but could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know who you are, actually. And, you know, I'm probably just totally embarrassing myself here, but.
No, you are anyway. Okay. So my name is Jake McIntyre. I'm the founder and principal of Union Creative Agency, which is a Utah-based kind of strategic planning and cultural planning firm. So we do this type of work. The bread and butter of what we do is master planning and strategic planning for communities and cultural organizations. So we have done these types of plans for various communities throughout Northern Utah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions before we dive in? Okay. So we kind of enter into the document with an intro from Janelle setting up kind of what she just walked you through today. High level, what is this plan? What are we looking forward to? You know, where are we with this process, right? So setting the tone there, you know, basic acknowledgements, introduction, setting up the plan, and then we'll pause here for a moment. I want to share a couple of things. So one of the things that we do when anytime we're thinking about master planning or these long-term plans, really want to understand, yes, there's all the nitty-gritty, the detail that goes to the rest of the plan, but we want to begin with thinking about what is the vision and what are the values, because ultimately they become what we think of as almost the guardrails that keep the plan on task, on track, and when things inevitably come up that we can't foresee at this point, these serve as those points you can reference back to, right? So in 4 years, when some opportunity comes up that's not in this master plan because we couldn't have seen it, we have this vision and values to come back to say, okay, is this opportunity right for us? Does it help us fulfill our vision related to the arts and our values? Can we uphold these values in what we do? So we developed these in collaboration with the steering committee based on community input, and it was an iterative process that we went through with the steering committee to develop these two statements or these two sets of items. The big thing with the values and the way that we talked about it and the way that I really think about values is they are not just nice to haves. These are the what we have all day, every time we think about doing the arts as a city. These four things have to be there. They're not just the, you know, it'd be cool if, you know, we could make this accessible. That would be nice, right? It's like, no, these are the things that we can uphold on a time after time basis and want to make sure that these are truly instilled within all of the work that we do. So as we talked as a group, these four of accessible, connected, intentional, and quality really bubbled to the top for us as a steering committee and as a planning team that reflected truly, you know, the goals here, what we're after. And these capture the essence of what ultimately is backed up through the rest of the plan. The other thing that I want to call out up in the vision quickly is that there were a couple of really important things that we determined through this process that show up throughout the plan, but I think is captured nicely here and is partially informed by the conversation we had as a group several months ago when we came with just the initial parts of this process, right? And we talked about what is the role of art in the future of South Jordan. We had those conversations with community members, with artists, with educators, with city staff. And ultimately where we came to is the arts in South Jordan and ultimately this master plan should be about quality of life for residents. It should be about aligning to the direction the city's already going, supporting that work. It should be about creating a sense of place, and it should be about really engaging all generations of people throughout South Jordan. And this is an important distinction because sometimes when we do these plans, the goal ultimately or the vision is let's create tourism. Let's create economic development. Let's create jobs. Let's do this and this and this, right? But ultimately, when we have the conversation here and through community conversations, steering committee, it came back time and time again to these ideas of quality of life, sense of place, and engaging opportunities for all. And so that's, and that idea of reflecting and connecting to strategic priorities. So not pulling us in other directions as a city, but keeping us in line with where we're going and what we care about.
Can I chime in real quick too? Yeah. I think my biggest takeaway when we brought this topic to you guys is like a pseudo roundtable exercise of you as a council, and we had you vote with the money and everything. I think that was my biggest takeaway is that it, and I think it aligns with our city's priorities and what we're doing in recreation as a department as well, is that we focus on the quality of life for our residents, and we really, this plan fits into that really nicely and is not venturing out into other areas. It's really in alignment.
And you'll see, we can talk about in detail where that shows up, but everything, every decision through the planning process came back to that vision and those values, right? Even down to what sites are we going to recommend and what types of budgets or types of artwork is appropriate at those sites all comes back to this page. So that's why we're not going to spend this long on all the pages, but otherwise we're going to be here for a while. So a couple of other things. We are just set up a section, kind of context of the arts in South Jordan. So where are we today? What is going on kind of at the inception of this arts master plan? Partially is just a baseline, right? Helping understand where are we today? What's going on? What are, you know, organizational charts, governance, funding, what mechanisms are in place currently? So there's some talk about the arts council, the structure of the arts council. So that's kind of setting baseline. And then go into methodology and process and walk through what did we do for this plan. Engagement, I think we were towards the tail end, where I guess we were right about the middle when we spoke last. We had finished some of the open house work, but we hadn't done the roundtables yet. So engagement was in really three primary pieces. There was open houses, as we called them. These were us being at community events, doing a few different exercises, having people vote on the type of artwork they wanted to see throughout the community, and placing dots kind of where they saw opportunities, but also knew of cultural assets. There was also a survey that was conducted by Y2 Analytics as kind of a parallel process. And I believe Kyrene is on the call if you have any questions about the survey specifically, because it was an amazing process. We learned a lot from the results of that, that very much directly influenced the rest of the plan. I want to call out back to that quality of life thing. One of the most exciting pieces for me to see in that survey, that I've never seen statistically come out as clearly as it did in this survey, was that residents who had a higher engagement with the arts also reported a higher quality of life. There was a direct correlation, and the opposite was also true. Those who reported a lower engagement with the arts also reported a lower quality of life. So there was a direct correlation there. And like I said, Kyrene can speak to that if you all have further questions. We also did stakeholder interviews, and you can see the stakeholders there that we interviewed. Those were largely, let's sit down with some of these folks and have a conversation about what's going on, what projects are coming up, what ways might they fit into the master plan. And then we did some larger stakeholder roundtables. One was with staff, and two were with local artists and arts educators. And we're not going to dive deep into this, but these were the kind of results of the open house voting. So you can see in terms of priority or how people kind of voted what types of art they wanted to see. Interactive art was huge, and then performing arts programming, arts education, kind of murals, functional art, fill out the rest of that upper end. You can see things like grants and resources for local artists was the lowest, right? A pretty significant margin. So that told us that people want art in the public space, they want to engage with that art, they want performing arts, less interested in the city, at least, playing a role in things like artist grants, supporting local arts organizations as its core mission. And that's also something we don't always see in communities, right? Sometimes that is flipped. So that was really nice to see. And we break it out by event, which we won't go into here, but the voting was really similar across the three events. There was some variation, but generally it was quite accurate and consistent. There's two maps here. Again, we don't need to spend a long time here, but these are just showing where do members of the public that participated in this activity, where do they want to see art? It's a little hard to view here without being able to zoom in, but you can see clusters kind of around Bingham Creek Regional Park, the called the Miners Mile lots. There's the district, I think, showing up on here, and then a lot around Town Center. Same here. The yellow dots are where people know art already is. So that part of helps us understand what are people aware of and what is showing up in their minds. This section overviews the survey. Again, if we have questions on that, I'll have Kyrene jump in. You can see kind of where survey results came from. There's a lot in here, so I won't spend a ton of time here. But let's see. Next is roundtables. This section kind of calls out some of the high-level pieces that we learned from roundtables. So things like building community, building a sense of place, a huge hunger and need, especially from the arts community, for dedicated arts facilities and venues. And that was a fun thing about this plan that we don't always have the opportunity to do, is that we were not just thinking about public art, even though there's, you know, a heavy weight of public art in this plan. We were thinking holistically about the arts and arts programming and arts facilities. Artist support, all sorts of things. There was a huge need for that dedicated arts facilities and venues, and that was brought up a significant amount, really, in almost every meeting, every roundtable. Other things like connecting to local schools, being very smart and kind of savvy about funding mechanisms, and thinking about diverse funding models and how those can, you know, different funding models can come together to make this possible. There were some concerns around, you know, how do we make sure that resources are appropriately assigned to this? Because there's a big vision, but how do we make sure that's possible? Being able to plan, there's a lot of words of caution. Let's make sure we're planning for things like maintenance, repair, replacement of public art pieces as is needed. If we're going to have facilities, what's the long-term plans for those facilities? And then making sure things like we have internal city structures to make this possible. So next we went into asset mapping. Again, we won't spend a ton of time on these individually unless we want to come back to any of them. But first we mapped where are the city's current arts assets. And you can see they're really kind of clustered on the east side of the city. Then we mapped private, so privately supported or owned arts assets. And you can see those are primarily throughout Daybreak, which makes sense. So you've got this interesting thing where if we put those on the same map, you've got quite a bit of arts assets. But when you look at them based on are they public or are they private, you have this big split. So that was an interesting thing to see. And that's not something we would typically see in another community because most communities don't have a Daybreak Arts Council, that funding mechanism. We then looked at, and the key on this is getting updated because we had some errors on some labels and things, but we looked at publicly owned parcels. So we looked at county, city, other public non-city, and then city/county, so shared ownership. So those are all the red and orange and yellow map items because those are likely places where art will go. And then the green are arts programs. The darkness and size correlate to how often programming is happening at those sites. We then looked at things like traffic patterns, roadways, transit, trails, mapped all those together, and you'll see kind of why we do this in a moment. Here we go. So we take all of those assets, we put them on top of each other, and we put assign weight based on importance related to public art. So as an example, where multiple pedestrian walkways or trails intersect, we rate higher than one that is just a single, or one that intersects with a park rates higher. Privately owned lots don't get mapped at all. Publicly owned get mapped higher. City gets a higher value than county, as an example. So we go through a process and we assign values, and that starts to help us see where does public art make sense. From there, we took this and we went out and we did spent a full day going around the city and visiting all these kind of hot spots and nodes and identifying, okay, which of these really makes sense for art, what makes sense at these sites, what types of budgets are appropriate for these sites. And then that ultimately leads us into the recommendations you'll see later in the plan. This central piece is kind of the nitty gritty, kind of nuts and bolts of the plan. What you might typically see in a master plan, strategic plan as goals, we're reframing here as focal points. So these four main focal points for the plan, and then each of those is made up of its individual items. So what we saw is a need to focus on these four pieces: internal program development, so that's in-house, cities, arts council, outside of city, so arts kind of community development, that's artists, organizations, and so such. Facilities and venues, and then public art. So those are the kind of four primary pillars. Within each of these, we break down into a set of guiding principles. So what is it we're ultimately trying to do, as an example, with internal program development? And then we break down that further into, in this example, funding, process and policy, so on. And then each of those bullet points is assigned a short-term priority, a medium-term priority, and that is based on time, so in a sense, urgency, and then long-term considerations are 7 to 10 years out. So those are, you're not quite ready to be worrying about this yet, but start watching for it, right? Because we can see down the road, hey, this is probably gonna come up, don't worry about it yet, but it should be thought of 7 to 10 years out. Jason had brought up in one of our steering committee meetings to provide a version of this where it's all organized by time in addition to by focal point, and we'll provide that once we finalize these so that the arts staff will have that. So that breaks out, and I won't go into the small bullet points, but we'll hit the highlights. So there's a section on funding, process and policy, staff development, arts council development, communication and branding. So those are the key pieces internally. Externally, that arts community development, thinking about arts education and classes, arts ecosystem building, which we can talk about if anyone has questions about that, but that's really like, what is the health of the arts community? That's one of the major roles an arts council and a city's arts department can play, is how are we supporting the community of artists and arts organizations? That's what big thing that makes an arts council different from a, say, an arts programming organization or an arts theater or something like that. Then local artists and organizational development. And then facilities and venues, that one is an error. Sorry, let me fix that. The header should be different. And then shared use of facilities, public-private opportunities. So we're calling out some of the projects that are happening throughout the county or throughout the city, based on time. So one of those, thinking about the Southwest Valley Performing Arts Center in downtown Daybreak. It's being talked about with Salt Lake County and Live Daybreak and Larry H. Miller Group. Also looking at things like opportunities at the Bastion Agricultural Center to bring in artwork. Then last is public art. So that's about creating gathering places, adopting more formal processes, funding, inventory, and maintenance practices, creating temporary public art activations, and then incorporating and kind of developing plans for public art with development projects.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
And go back. I
yeah.
noticed that, maybe one more before that.
Yeah.
Two of them, it says work with Salt Lake County, the Daybreak, Larry H. Miller Real Estate, like the Southwest Performing Arts Center, and additional things throughout downtown Daybreak.
Yep.
I don't know why Live Daybreak would be part of that as the HOA. Salt Lake County and the Larry H. Miller Real Estate team would be the right team, but I don't know why.
Because Live Daybreak, when Larry H. Miller sells off a piece of commercial real estate, a percentage of that goes to Live Daybreak to be reinvested by the Arts Council, the Live Daybreak Arts Council. And so they're the funding mechanism that Larry H. Miller has.
Two fun things.
So are they the ones putting in like the statues and stuff
yes,
like that?
The Live Daybreak Arts Council.
That, but the Performing Arts Center, I don't.
Yeah, no, with
HOA
that one, I don't think they don't necessarily. Yeah.
I'm like,
We can take them out. I may have misunderstood, but it seems to me that they would be an active partner in that, but maybe that is not the case. Maybe it's exclusively through Salt Lake County and Larry H. Miller Real Estate, and we can also confirm that because they have asked.
To the best of my understanding.
So that's our understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
so
Daybreak out of that one.
By surprise. I don't think Live Daybreak, I don't think the HOA is part of that. That's just a partnership between the city and the county and Larry H. Miller.
Okay.
Thank
out.
You.
Yeah. Next is us sort of mapping out what arts opportunities exist citywide. So this map, again, helpful to zoom in on a on your own computer. But what we did is we started looking at, initially when we began this plan, one of the first things we did is looked at all of your other plans, right? And the general plan, specifically in the where we gather section, calls out a need for an arts and culture district. And so being informed by that, we were looking in that way of thinking, okay, arts and culture district, where should that be? Where does that make sense? And as we started doing the work and working with steering committee and community, we found, actually an arts and culture district doesn't make the most sense here. A singular place to be an arts and culture district didn't feel like the right solution. So we deviated from that and developed what we're calling arts clusters. So these are these potential places where arts can be clustered. There can be a concentration of arts assets, but it's not centralized in the way that a singular district would be. And we can talk about the reasons for that if you want to go into it further. There's a variety of reasons that came up, but that's where this idea of clusters comes from. So we have, six clusters. So we have the Jordan River cluster, we have Town Center cluster, we have Bingham Creek, and then Downtown Daybreak, the District, and Trails. So Trails are their own cluster, and you can specifically see calling out the network of regional trails and canal trails as being kind of the long-term strategy around trails. So those have different color coding based on if they're city primarily, they're private primarily, or they're a partnership in the case of Downtown Daybreak. So the next slides kind of zoom into each of those, say what type of things are appropriate in those areas And then there's some other individual sites that are called out here that we go into more depth on as well, like the Miner's Mile lots as an example.
I really like the clusters rather than just an arts district. I think in our lot, we have the longest linear boundaries, you know, of any city. I really like the idea of clusters across the city.
Yeah, it was hard because of that linear nature. It was so hard to say, well, let's put it here.
Right.
Well, that does so little to serve everyone else. And it seemed like no matter where you put it, you were kind of misinvesting in somewhere else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this way, it starts to break that up a little bit and distribute that in a way that I think is more effective. So this zooms into the individual arts clusters, and I'm going to get tested on my memory on the names here, since I don't have the titles ahead of me. So Jordan River cluster initially, and we won't dive into each of these in too much depth unless you want to pause on them, but just for me to pause and set up what we have. So we kind of describe each cluster or in a minute site. We talk about the budget ranges that are appropriate, and those are going to be based on the piece. So in a cluster, you're going to have many pieces of public art. Some are going to be small, some are going to be large. Generally, I would say we leaned on the lower end of budgets for this project, not just Jordan River, but throughout the whole city, because of that idea of let's come back to resident quality of life. Let's come back to, I think, biggest bang for our buck. Let's think about how can we get the most art throughout the city possible. So when we met last, I brought up the example of, you know, would we rather spend $2,500 on a mural, or would we rather spend $250,000 on that same mural? Because you can very easily do both of those things. And the conversation very much was like, we'd much rather have many $2,500 murals than a singular $250,000 mural from an international artist, right? So that answer might have been very different in another community. But that's how we were informed as we moved to this. That doesn't mean we're not recommending some higher dollar projects. But we're recommending fewer of them and in very strategic locations. Generally speaking, though, the budget ranges we're recommending are on the lower end of what we would typically, keeping that idea of resident quality of life in mind. We then go into Town Center. There's a lot going on in Town Center, as you know, so this one gets its own little map. We talked about things like Aunt Mame's potentially transitioning into essentially a local visual arts center. We have kind of a whole concept presented that could be possible with that, and then the park space around it. The Gale Center certainly staying as a cultural asset. Opportunities to look at the, current but someday former community and senior center to be a local community performing arts center to kind of dovetail in and supplement the county's regional performing arts center in downtown Daybreak. And then some other recommendations around individual public art pieces. In each of these, you'll also see there's inspiration images. The captions we'll just pull once we know, yes, those are the images for sure. And so those will serve one as a visual inspiration. Oh, what's possible here? But also for arts staff and arts council, this essentially serves as a research material for them to be able to say, okay, who are artists working in a way that is relevant to this site that we can then start researching? So they'll have all the information about that piece. They can go and do digging and learn more about that. So it almost is like a big Pinterest board for opportunities at each of these individual sites. Trails network. Some really interesting opportunities around trails, I think particularly given the quality of regional trails throughout South Jordan. This is Bingham Creek. Bingham Creek is one of those we would recommend a higher dollar amount because it's a regional park. And I think that we heard, one of the big things that we heard we were excited about was land art as a something that the community was really interested in. It was one of those that ranked higher in those voting exercises. Bingham Creek and Jordan River clusters would be the ones to consider something like that. And land art is essentially, in its simplest form, it's using the art, like creating the land as a form of art. So think of the spiral jetty at the Great Salt Lake, if you're familiar with that piece. Utah has some of the most profound and prolific land art pieces in the world. At South Jordan could have the opportunity to say, we want to add to that kind of state collection, and the Bingham Creek Regional Park would be a way to do that because it's a regional asset. We would recommend, though, even with something like a larger regional asset, sprinkling in some smaller community assets in there as well. Downtown Daybreak, obviously kind of a very different vibe in the future than the vacant lot that it is currently, but a lot of opportunities there. The district would be obviously a private development, but it came up by location and by opportunity so often that we did include it as a cluster. And then these are individual sites. So Miner's Mile, we talked about doing something large scale that could be essentially not engaged with directly, but seen by vehicle traffic. So it's not a pedestrian focused public art piece, but more one that can be engaged at kind of the vehicle level. We also talked about doing something that engaged with wind at that site, given the wind.
We could do that all over the city.
Yeah, it's a theme. It's absolutely a theme. As if you look closely and read through, it's absolutely a theme. So this is the concrete retaining walls on the side of South Jordan Parkway as you're coming in. It's kind of an opportunity for a welcome. This section breaks down essentially how public art makes sense at it parks and how to think about that. So you have a great parks master plan that goes in and breaks out and says, okay, these are regional parks, community parks, neighborhood parks, special use parks, and a few other examples that weren't relevant to public art. But we then took that and said, okay, at a regional park, here's how you should think about not just public art, but arts programming. At a community park, here's how you think about it. So instead of zooming in on all of the individual parks, we kind of dovetailed in with that parks master plan and said, you know, as you're thinking about programming parks, if it's a special use park, think about that differently than if it's a regional park, right? So we kind of dovetailed in with that plan. There's images for parks and then general opportunities. So vacant lots and storefronts, transit stops, continuing the utility box wrap programs, very popular, and then other public infrastructure. So you notice in the voting of preference, functional art was rated really high. That's these types of ideas, right? So how can we make things like trash receptacles more aesthetically pleasing, or bike racks or benches or lighting or whatever that may be? So there's kind of a general section there. We go into arts facilities. We talk about what our recommended vision for Aunt Mames could be. I can go in depth on that if you'd like. We talk about Southwest Valley Performing Arts Center and some of the goals that the county has laid out around that. South Jordan Community Performing Arts Center and what that could be and how that could supplement the other facilities. The Bastion Agricultural Center and what that has the potential to be based on conversations we've had with them in terms of art. Budget precedence just sets up what's a $10,000 project versus a $100,000 project, just to give kind of some visual cues. And then this section is basically in depth of all those focal points. So we go through and lay out what should the processes be for policy governance, all of that. What are the roles? So what's the recreation department's roles? What's the art staff's role? Planning department, how do they fit? Other city departments and committees. And then we're recommending, I'll just spend a second here, two different groups to support the creation of public art. These are both ad hoc groups, one being a public arts expert panel, which is a collection of kind of industry experts. You could think of architects, engineers, landscape architects, public artists, fabricators, so on and so forth. These would be experts that would essentially be not on call financially, but on call to you and available as volunteers who might step in and say, you know, we want to be involved in the creation of a public art piece. So we'll kind of advise on that individual piece and bring that expertise in. This is a model that's used in communities all over the country and works really well because you're maybe not going to get those people to serve on your arts council on a consistent basis, but they will want to serve on individual public art projects. And then public art selection committee is again an ad hoc group that would be made up of arts staff, arts council members, members of that public art expert panel, and then other kind of relevant partners and stakeholders. And that group essentially stewards a public art piece into creation. We are not going to go through this full flow chart, but this kind of walks through the process of creating a public art piece and formalizes that. This largely mimics what you're already doing, but it puts it on paper. And it formalizes it in a way that it hasn't been yet. And there are a few small variations from what you're doing currently, but generally it's consistent with what you're doing. Then this section just lays out some best practices, things like insurance, maintenance, project contracting, all of those types of things. Deaccessioning is essentially getting rid of a piece of your public art collection and why you would need to do that. And if you do, how that process should go. Red flags, things to look out for. Other relevant plans that this plan is connected to or referencing. So we break that out. And then funding model recommendations. So we can go in depth on this if you want. This might be the place that you want to talk through a little bit more detail. But continuing with some general fund allocation, which is your primary funding source now. A percent for art, we're recommending a beginning of 0.25% for public art on capital improvement projects. The standard, I would say, the standard is 1 to 1.5, even up to 2% in some places. But here, based on the way funding works and the way that, that we are seeing the opportunities, we would say start smaller than that. What that means is basically a capital improvement project, you could add, say, 0.25% to that for public art at that individual site. So
are they places in Utah that are adding 1 to 2%?
Salt Lake City is 1.5, but one is kind of the baseline that most people start with.
One's pretty standard.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. No, it's interesting. And we'll have to watch and see what the legislature does.
Yeah.
Says about, you know, impact fees. That's quite a conversation there, but
yeah,
that's good to know.
It's been around for long enough. It'll be interesting. I agree. It'll
yeah.
be interesting to see. There's a lot of communities that have been doing this for several decades. So, but that doesn't mean it can change.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And no, then the rounded up is amazing. I'm like, I think the rounded up program is one of the coolest arts funding mechanisms I've seen. And I've not seen it in any other community around the whole country that we've researched. Even doing further research, I'm not seeing a lot of it. It's very cool. I think a lot of communities should copy you. It's a really effective tool. Right now, it's actually bringing in a pretty good amount of money, and it's not that accessible, and it's not marketed that well yet. Not that many people are really participating in it yet, and it's still bringing in pretty good money. So I think, you know, I know Rachel in communications has already been making some steps to make that tool more accessible, easier. Making sure more people know about it. So I think that will wind up being a really nice funding mechanism for you all as a group. And then, I don't know what was that top one. Oh, okay. So these are largely partnerships. So thinking about how funding can work between partners. Our recommendation, whenever possible, is that if a partner is going to come in and contribute to a public art piece, that serves as a donation to the city and it still runs through the city's public art process, and that you don't have a bunch of outside people able to kind of privately fund public art, essentially. So that doesn't mean you shouldn't accept that as a financial contribution. They would then get a seat at the table of the selection process, but it shouldn't be something we wouldn't recommend essentially granting access to public land to install privately funded artwork on that land, if that makes sense. So setting a kind of tone for that, and that goes, we're in more depth here. And then the last is just a set of arts resources, which is really for arts council and arts staff to just know, here are grants, here's general resources, professional development opportunities, so on and so forth, that you should be accessing. Okay, that's all 75 pages of it. It's a lot, I know.
That's awesome. I'm wondering, we don't have to go back to it, but
yeah.
I'm wondering if we could get a copy of the survey results. I'd like to read what the people who responded to the survey
mm-hmm.
said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have that.
Just
because
for us as policymakers, it's important that we know what, you know, that specific feedback from residents of our city, I'd love to read.
Yeah.
So I'll gradually go back here as we're talking about it. So there's a link to the report in this document. So you'll have access to it there. And then their team did a great job of kind of synthesizing the key insight from each question in the survey. And that's the bullet points that you see show up in here. So these bullet points are essentially the insight from each individual question or key point. So this would give you a nice summary. And then the report is linked in the top there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I see Kyrene has her hand raised. Kyrene, go ahead. If we can bear with us just a sec, we'll get it. Okay, there we go. Are
oh,
you you there?
All right.
Hi.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for having me. So just chiming in briefly on the survey results, I'm happy to send around a copy of the top line document and the appendix of open-ended response verbatims that residents gave in that survey, if that's helpful for further digestion. But yeah, Jake has done a great job pulling all of the things from our full report into something that can be read a little bit more easily with the rest of these great recommendations.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, this is really well done, incredibly well done. I know I would just like to be able to read the verbatim stuff because it's word for word what our residents are saying, and that, you know,
it's
helpful.
It's helpful.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
And that's not linked in the report, right? The verbatim responses?
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, we can make sure of that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm curious what interactive art is. I
call my wife.
So let me find an example visually. So interactive art is essentially typically...
That was the top choice, right?
Yeah, it was. So what would be example? That option E, the light up teeter-totters, would be a great example. So artwork that you are, or B, those are like little swinging benches, but artwork that you're very physically interacting with and manipulating. They're usually sound or light-based in some way. Very awesome, but they come with a bit of a maintenance warning, right? Because they're a thing that sits there, costs less to maintain than a thing that is interacted with by the public. But,
I was just going to chime in that in the Harmons, in Daybreak, just outside of it on the shore side of the lake, there's a flower installation that lights up, but as people go up to it and interact, it actually changes colors.
Oh, cool.
And then Live Daybreak also has a giant guitar. I'm not sure the exact intersection that it's at currently, but it has a wind-up feature that, you know, as you wind it, the balls go up and then they roll back down. So things like that. There's swings that as people play on it, it does music.
Mm-hmm.
You can do musical fences that as people walk by, kind of like a xylophone, things like that.
That's that option in the lower corner with the like people jumping. So those stripes are essentially like music notes.
But most of these are probably either in parks or in places where large amounts of people are gathered.
Primarily.
I've seen one before, but I can't remember where. But it's essentially a chess. It's a chess board, and all of the players or the people come and they dress up, and be part of the game. And then
that's
someone is obviously moving the players. That would be fun.
And there's I love that of the dressing up. But there's the simpler ones where they just have like life-size chess pieces that people have to go around and move them around.
Do we have a copy of this? I'm looking.
No, we didn't receive
a copy
as part of our package.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I looked. I don't have a copy of this packet.
No.
So the study session presentations normally don't go out in the packet. We don't create a packet for the study sessions.
I don't want to take a vote on this in a month or next meeting if we don't have a packet to.
I'd like to.
If you can send that out so we can.
All of it.
Yeah,
like that's, you know, I mean, it's. It's so well done, it's so comprehensive, and it's so significant in scope. I think it deserves the respect of being read thoroughly before we make a vote on it, and also it has the potential to be a significant scope for our plan going forward.
Absolutely.
It is the plan going forward, so I would like a copy of it to read through.
So on the...
Okay.
Oh,
thank you.
Is everybody done? Yeah. On the regional park, you went through it fast enough that I couldn't read it. Actually, I can't quite hardly even see it from here. But is there the intelligence of collaborating then with the regional players there on the funding side of things? I mean, I would hope that that's embedded somewhere in there, that, you know, if we're going to have something at Bingham Creek, which I totally agree with, I think that'd be a lot of fun, whatever that is. But, you know, we need to get some county collaboration funding.
I think because of the nature of the Bingham Creek Park Authority, that we already have kind of the basics of that set up.
Yeah.
As they start moving into different phases, or the board says, hey, we think this would be a great idea, they'd be having to approach the city and the county because we're on the hook for the ongoing maintenance. So there would be, you know, partnership already built in there. And then we'd be reaching, they'd be reaching out to like the ZAP funding and things like that as well.
For the funding.
I would also, that one would be one I think would be very competitive for like federal grants or other national level grants through organizations like the National Endowment for the Arts.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
You know, there's a there's some grants through Bloomberg Philanthropies. There's a variety of, and those are referenced at the end of the document. But I think when you're talking about that scale, yeah, you're probably looking at a collaborative funding mechanism in this case with those partners, but I think likely bringing in some other external funding
yeah.
would be
appropriate. Sojo Jetty. Ooh.
Sojo Jetty.
I'm kidding.
Or Yeti. Or...
I'm kidding about that.
Yeah.
That mistake.
Yeah. We could do it better.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. This is really well done. Anybody have any other questions? Patrick, any questions?
No, well done. I appreciate you going through all this work to show us what the residents are wanting to see.
Thank you. I think we'd all like a copy of it, just like I said, so we can read, you know, read all the fine print. And I think this deserves that. It's a lot of work, and we know a lot of people put a ton into this, and all the stakeholders have. We just appreciate it. Thanks for bringing such an impressive package to us, and look forward to digging into the fine print, right? You know,
yeah.
That we're going through, whatever, but the presentation was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks. Okay, I'm going to ask for a motion to recess our city council meeting and move us to executive closed session to discuss pending or reasonable imminent litigation and the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property in that order. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
I get a second.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, thank you. Thank you to everyone for being here. Appreciate it. Back to our study meeting, and we will now move to the recess. Do I need a motion to recess this?
Yes.
To move into our regular meeting?
No, you can recess
come
on
back
your
into
own. But you guys share and recess.
Okay, then we are going to recess this city council study meeting and move us into the city council regular meeting. In the council chambers, we will reconvene at the conclusion of that meeting in here. Okay, thank you. Okay, welcome back to our council study meeting.
Okay.
We welcome you and your team being here.
Thank
you so much for joining us tonight. Welcome.
Matt.
Are we good?
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm just making sure we're good because we have to make sure it's recording appropriately,
right?
We have Mr. Harris with us online. So thanks, Patrick, for sticking with us.
Councilmember Zander may try to join us while we're in this meeting. I just sent him a link.
Okay, thank you. Great. All right, we're here. To talk about Glenmore.
Okay.
All right, so with that, we'll turn it over to you, Ben.
All right, thank you. Let's see, this is kind of an exciting part because this is some of the fun things that we want to do at Glenmore. So I think this will be helpful. It's also a way for us to eliminate all the residential that is at Glenmore. The lots that we currently have approved there will all be gone. We're relocating those to another property. And we want to be able to do some fun resort type activities there at Glenmore. And we've already started doing these things, but we can do them to a higher level, have some small conventions and different things there, of course, that'll be fun. And I'll only take about 15 minutes, I think, so am I ready to push button?
Yep.
You point it over this direction.
Point it
at
over this
plant here. Okay, of course.
There you go.
Okay. This was the initial map that we had sent in. All this property here on the golf course in blue here, and then the majority of this property right here in red is zoned residential for small lots up against the townhomes here, et cetera. This was the one we sent over initially. I was out of town, and so I made some adjustments to it because I didn't need this much commercial on the property. I'm going to preserve the golf course in an open space zoning. So
Oh, I have another map that'll show that. This is the proposed site plan. This is the clubhouse here. This is a future retail building here. This is the little event center. We kind of converted the cart barn into something that's really fun for people to be able to work out inside of. And this is the future resort hotel building. So we kept our distance away from our neighbors here, but there again, everything fully functions as a golf course there.
Hey, Doug?
Yeah.
They've got the wrong presentation up for you.
Do they?
Yeah, they're gonna pull up that.
See, that was like the 3 o'clock version. I think
there's
a 4 o'clock version.
Yeah, this is so.
Yeah, we're on Doug's
seat.
There you go.
Yeah, this is the one set at 3:58.
Yeah, there you go. Staff was really, really responsive to get that back over.
And it looks like I just saw that Mrs. Zander has joined us as well.
Oh, good.
With me.
Yes.
Okay.
Let me go grab him. Oh, 408 right there. Let's go with that one.
Well, we've had a pretty good year at the golf course.
There you go.
There we go. That's a little more familiar too. Okay. And Tamara's here now, even though we can't see her.
Yeah.
We can see Patrick.
Yep.
Okay. These are just some snapshots of Glenmore. Let's see. Oh, there it goes. The community that we've built here, the different celebrations that we have there. It's just an insane community gathering place. Fireworks were the best ever this year.
Fireworks, I mean, are good.
I mean, the neighbors now just line up on their own fence lines. They don't even pay $10 to go. Yeah. I'm gonna send somebody out in a cart together. So anyway.
Only seems fair.
These are some of the things that we're most proud of. The number one junior league in the country, volume wise and otherwise. We just had the junior league from where they came in from. Japan, the Netherlands, I think the mayor and some others came and visited there. That's one of the big reasons why we need this resort hotel on the premises, so we can bring these people in and we can entertain them and bring them right there to the course. The PGA, their headquarters is at Glenmore, and the state there. And the Special Olympics we bring there, where the veterans come in. We want to team up with the Huntsman Cancer Center, so that we can bring families in, they can stay at the hotel, the resort hotel, which will be a nightly, weekly, monthly stay. So they can have therapy there, the veterans can come in and have therapy there. And so there's just a lot of connectivity there that I think will really put us on the map. The only place I know of that even resembles this would be the homestead, maybe, in Heber, that has some ability to stay at with a hotel in the state, which is doesn't compare to
it's not as nice a golf course then.
No, not nearly as nice. Not nearly as nice of people that work there. These are just I just have a handful of pictures here to show you the golf course, and then I'll show you the layouts here. This, and I mentioned this last time, has not been touched. This is how that golf course looks now. It used to be brown. And now it's all green. We water it from curb to curb, and we actually use a very water-efficient sprinkling system, even though there are neighbors that wouldn't think that we do. But we're very conservative with our water. Okay.
There's a certain neighbor that just cannot grasp that you actually own the water, and I can't tell you not to water.
Right.
Well, and if I can interject, Darcy and I had a really good conversation recently, and I know that she's talked to a legislator, and we talked some more and did a little bit of strategy, and I think we're going to put together a sit-down conversation with a couple of key folks to look into some legislation that could be helpful as far as the age of the water system and the opportunity to be more efficient at water-wise, similar to what they've done down in Cedar City. So anyway, Darcy and I have had that conversation recently.
That would be wonderful, because that's a huge thing that we need to overcome. I showed this like this because this is the current approval, so that people realize how impactful this obviously would be on the golf course. And so all this will go away, you'll see, with the rezone. All the housing will head up to the Shoreline Project. And so this is what I'm thinking that we'll need to have in commercial. This is what I originally sent in, was this red outline. But we have the ponds here, and this is the commercial. So this is the clubhouse, this is a retail building here. And so this area in here will be where the resort hotel would go. I put a little stem like that on it, just because we have some fishing opportunities here where we wanted to bring in some Bonneville Shoreline trout and, you know, do some fly fishing and some fun things like that. So there's some possibilities in other commercial uses just in this little strip here. But there again, it doesn't affect the golf course. So that is the current layout, how it would lay out there. So this building tucks up behind. This is the 18 hole. We actually have plans to bring this waterway. Kirk doesn't know about this.
Write this down.
It's going to be on his epitaph.
This is for slide 743.
Yeah, I went to that really fancy place in Idaho, and they have a hole. Well, they have a driving range, and it's they shoot it across the lake onto an island. And so what I wanted to do is connect this pond, bring it around like this, and so this will be like an island. It'll be an insane, I mean, people will not, we will have so many balls in here.
Yes.
That it'll be insane. But it just gives you something that everybody will talk about. Have you been to Glenmore? Have you tried to get on the 18 hole on the island? And it's just going to, it's really going to be a tough one. It's really going to be a tough one. And what helps, too, is that everybody tries, when they hit this hole, they always try to land it over here because they don't want to hit this water. And so it always, you know, comes over here in this area. And so that way, they've got no chance. They'll just have to hit it head on. So it'll be fun.
I'd probably ricochet off the building.
Yeah, you probably could. We don't let left-handed hitters come over here. This would be a little retail building here, and then the clubhouse right here. And then a smaller convention center would be inside. We rezoned the commercial to go clear out on the backside in here because there could be opportunities for other things. There could be opportunities to do a larger convention center possibly in here, but right now I love the look of this when you come in, and we can host several hundred people with what we have here, what we'd have here now anyway. So we're just going to go with that. This is how the building would look right here. We decided
how tall is it though?
It's just three. Yeah, we kept it away after I talked to you earlier, and originally I thought, well, I don't know, maybe we might need to go 4 or 5, and I said, and after I talked with you, I thought, man, I don't want it to be that ostentatious. I don't know if that's a word, but big. And so we dropped it down, and it'll still accommodate it. And so that's what it'll kind of look like all together. You'll still be able to drive in, see the beautiful greens here, and the little lake here, and clubhouse, of course. The retail building will be right here. This is kind of a close-up of it, so it's going to be similar in architecture to the clubhouse. We have the PGA committed here. We have a verbal commitment from Snell Grove, and we want to bring, been talking with Kavanaugh's Candy, to bring them in. They have like the best chocolate, right? I mean, and different retailers that will be along the bottom there. And also in that retail building. And with the park over there, I think we're gonna be really successful with that. But in here will be a little convention area. We're looking at doing some different things on this backside. I'll go back where we could have some fun things here. But this is just really a draft. Just wanted to get out there.
Tamara can't hear very well. She's asked if you speak louder. I know, for what it's worth.
Camera, why are you not here?
There's a microphone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. Is that better, Tamara?
She's actually trying to log in too from a different phone to see if she'll get a headset.
So go ahead and take your seat down. Where am I sitting?
All right. Okay.
Thank you.
So, beautiful building, I think. Looks beautiful. And that's what we hope to alter the name to. Swinmore Golf Resort. So expanded the uses there at Glenmore. And it'll be beautiful. So this is that 18th hole I was telling you about right there. And so this will come on around and just be an island there. So it'll be a lot of fun. So, so we're asking the council to rezone that portion commercial. And so we can do this. And it'll eliminate, obviously, the residential lots there. And we'll zone it commercial there and open space on the backside. Terminate the old agreement where there was concerns about, you know, the possibility of the city, the buyback option. We let that lapse, so that's no longer even there. I think that's true, isn't it, Ryan? Okay, so you don't have to worry about that anymore. I wasn't going to let it go, so we have, obviously, so you're good. So anyway, any thoughts or comments on this? Is any direction you'd like to
I
go back to?
I have one question, probably for Ryan, and that is, so is it essentially a simultaneous close with the Glenmore development and the shoreline then regarding the housing units, the 72 units being transferred?
So you said close, and that's more of a real estate term. What we would do is we'd get both development agreements done and ready to sign and sign them at the same time. So even if Shoreline's a little bit ahead of this, so even if that one's ready to go, we'd have you approve the development agreement subject to the Glenmore development agreement being approved. And then in the agreements, they would acknowledge the transfer of development rights to 72 residential housing units being transferred from Glenmore over to Shoreline. You have told us to continue to work with them on Shoreline for 8 units per acre, mixed use, a lot of other details, but that's really high level. And then those 72 units would be on top of that, is my understanding. And so if you want them both on the same night, it would delay this or delay Shoreline just a little bit. If you want Shoreline to continue move at its pace, we hopefully will have that done sooner and later, and we will be able to make it contingent upon this passing too.
Well, it doesn't have to be a simultaneous execution instead of closing.
Exactly,
but
the two agreements have to reflect the transfer of the development
that's,
rights.
That's
what
probably what I was referring to.
And they have to, you can't, one can't be totally executed. What we'll do is have the mayor sign them at the same time. We'll approve them, but it's contingent upon you having both. You sign both. Mr. Young signs both, and then we they're done. And the rezones are always contingent upon the signing of the development agreement. So it's that chicken egg thing we always do, and they all come to fruition at the same time in that case.
Anyone else? Well, the only resident complaint I can imagine, Doug, is the three-story hotel right by the homes that are there. You know, they'll
you put it back up.
Feeling like people will be looking back into their backyards. I don't know exactly what they're doing in their backyards, but
yeah, so I do.
You're watching your fireworks.
Yeah, I'm watching my fireworks. There'll be a pretty good, probably a 20-foot buffer here with lots of trees, and this is only 3 stories. And we have parking and et cetera right there.
In between, yeah.
So I deliberately pulled away from them. So sure. I mean, we're going to be probably about 100 feet away from them.
Oh.
So I mean, we're not talking just a short stint.
Oh, that's good.
I kept in mind the neighbors there, and I think they love me. I mean, that developer came in there, and they're storm drain system didn't work, and I fixed that for them. And their water comes out into the golf course. They had nothing but weeds on the back side of that, and I probably spent $50,000 on that, fixing that up, and they never, I never got a check in the mail. and their netted fence is on my property. So, I mean, and everybody I've talked to over there, I talked to one of the gals that's the talker over there, and I says, hey, we're looking at doing this idea. And everybody knows what I'm talking about. And I says, we're looking at doing this. Oh, I think everybody will love it. And honestly, I haven't had anybody that I've talked to.
No pushback at all.
Yeah, but, hey,
it's great.
I've been doing this for 40 years. So you never know, right? So,
This might be too much into the weeds at this point, but what about, is there really enough parking for all this? Because I love what you're presenting, but I was also there the night of the fireworks show.
Yeah.
And that whole parking lot, the dirt, everything was taken up.
Yeah.
And so just adding, a resort type, hotel plus the regular golf course traffic. I guess I'm just concerned whether or not that parking area can truly hold everyone that you're envisioning coming to your resort.
I'm not saying it won't be cozy.
It's cozy now. Your parking's
not
pretty
it
tight.
Won't be cozy. But we are actually expanding it.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. And if you guys would give me back my ground that I own half this road on right here, I could pull it more this way. But just a little jab there. But no, what you're seeing here, just in this area here, is nearly double the parking.
Oh, really?
Because what we're doing is what we have now is you're able to pick up an entire row of parking here plus the expansion. It'll actually, this curb will actually go back in. It won't affect this, but you'll go here now and there's a curb there.
Yeah.
But we're actually going to send it back another 20 feet.
Oh, okay.
And so we'll create more parking here, and more parking here, and more parking here, and parking there. And this parking goes up and around the backside.
Yeah.
So, we have made sure that we have parking. And honestly, people that come and would stay there would normally have one car.
Yeah.
So that's a good point, though. But I think we've got that conquered.
I want to turn to Patrick and Tamara and see if there's any way we can show the camera. Just a second. I can't see you yet, but we're pulling you back up. See, Mr. Harris, do you have any comments?
I like the ideas, what we're hearing here. As far as doing some neat, better things over at Glenmore, I think I can see that Doug wants to, take the golf course. He's already improved it to a much nicer golf course than where when he received it, and he's but wants to continue to take it to the next level. I think in the golf course world, I think when you can do that, I think it's going to attract better golfers. I think you'll be able to charge higher. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing for the neighbors around there, but higher green fees are I think it's just going to be a higher caliber golf course, along with and all the things that can support that golf course are good things in my mind.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Tamara, do you have any thoughts to share about this proposal?
Thank you, Mayor. Not necessarily. I was trying so hard to catch everything. I only got the last few minutes. I heard three-story hotel, and before that, it was really hard to discern what was being said. So I apologize. I don't have a really good understanding of what's been presented.
Okay. Really high-level recap, turning the Glenmore Golf Course into the Glenmore Golf Resort and putting a resort hotel there on the property. Of course, moving the 72 units from the put option over to the Shoreline project, which has been discussed, and adding some retail on the bottom of the hotel and a couple little retail pads, places that folks would go and as they continue to host so many things, give people a place on premise to be able to stay.
So I'm curious how many units were in that three-story hotel?
We'd like to get 105 rooms.
What would that be equivalent to in South Georgia? Do we have another hotel about that size?
I have no idea.
I'm just curious for context.
Country Suites.
I don't know if we know
else.
That.
Okay.
I don't know if we know the answer.
Not a big deal.
that we could find that out, but I don't think anybody in this room knows the answer to that yet.
That'll handle all the tournaments because you figure you bring in, it'll handle the tournaments. And that's the count.
Perfect. Yeah, I heard Jason's comments on parking and your comments, Doug, about the neighbors. And I'm sure later on we talk about setbacks and landscaping.
Yeah.
I think that's going to help the neighbors be happy. So I'm good with it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to weigh in really quickly. I am really supportive of this concept. I really like it. I have the privilege of being invited to come over to a lot of these groups that come and to get to speak and welcome them to the city and whatever. Glenmore's never seen traffic like they're seeing now. It's unprecedented, and we have more groups coming into the city because of Glenmore Golf Course than any other reason. All the other reasons.
Right.
They're coming to Glenmore, and they're coming from all over.
Proud to have them.
Very proud to have them. And there is a complete desert in the area of any economic development. Like, they can't shop anywhere or buy a drink or anything. There's just nothing in that area to do that,
it's
right?
True.
And so your shop is busy. Your chef does a great job. Your catering is really, because you have to be in-house because there is nowhere else around, right? It's what it is. I think this will do extremely well and give all of these golfers from here to high heaven, from across the globe now that are coming, a place to stay on premise. And I think when our splash park electrical equipment flooded, I went twice down to the Wardle Farms Park in Bluffdale with my grandkids, and we went to the splash park there. And there's also nothing around there. And as we're leaving, and it was 1,000 degrees and it was hot and whatever, there is a new little Arctic Circle right next to it. Packed, because it's the only place around to go.
Right.
Well, there's nothing else around the regional park. There's nothing else. I think this is going to do really well. And I think a lot of folks would like it. And I'm really supportive of it.
Yeah, thank you.
Me too.
So it looks to me like we're getting nods across the board to proceed with working on it.
Is Tamara still old?
Oh, she's there.
Yeah.
And Tamara, I'm thinking about starting a pool to see if we can come up with enough funds to buy you shirts of a different color.
Yeah.
She won't wear them.
I told her it's hemi green, but it's not
hemi. Hey now.
I just thought you were going to tell me.
We're becoming a national craze at this point.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
It's actually Glenmore Green.
Glenmore Green.
Oh, well, there we go.
It is.
Xander Green, Glenmore Green, I'll take it.
It actually is. Yeah. We have that color in our logo.
It's awesome. Well, it sounds like the council is all giving the nod to, you know, keep working down this path, keep working toward this process. There was one lady that I was with at a golf tournament a couple months ago who had heard kind of rumor about this idea and asked a little bit about it and said, so, you know, is that going to be a possibility that there might be, you know, a hotel here for all the things? And I said, you know, it's been tossed around. It hasn't officially come to the city, but it's been tossed around, and I know there's conversation about it. And her response was, I think that would be amazing. I think it would be fantastic. Look at this beautiful golf course. So many people are coming, giving them a place on premise where they could buy some stuff and stay right there. It's really good. It's good for the city. It's good for the area. So that was her feedback too, which was nice to hear. Please.
The La Quinta Hotel on South Jordan Parkway is 104 rooms. The parking requirement for hotels is one parking stall per hotel room.
Okay, so Tamara, did you hear that? The La Quinta Hotel is 104 units, so that's about that size. That's not that
perfect.
Big.
Same size.
Yeah.
About the same size.
Same room size.
Oh, that's good. Go ahead, Mrs. Zander. Go ahead.
I didn't hear. Do we? Is there a reception center? I know Doug talked about before about a reception center being
there'll be
on the premises.
There'll be a convention center in it. Yeah.
Inside the hotel.
Yes.
So a meeting place where people could actually come and host conferences or whatever. I think that's brilliant. Sounds great.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
We just don't have anything like that in that immediate area.
They don't have anything like this in the state.
It's awesome.
Honestly.
I'm excited about the snow groves.
That's right.
Right?
My wife's grandfather was the snow grove that started snow grove ice cream.
Oh, wow.
Every time we go to St. George, we go to snow groves.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this.
They have the best rocky road.
Yeah.
They use almonds in their rocky road, and they put a little bit of salt in it, and it's the premium, right? Okay.
That's good.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Well, tell Richard that we want rocky road.
Oh, we will. We will let him know.
So. Okay. Does staff have the information you need?
Mm-hmm.
Any questions for us?
Do you have anything you need?
I think we're good.
Okay.
Basically, we're going to write the development agreement, transferring the development rights, going to the CC zone, kind of our standard form, what you're used to. There's not a lot more complicated for this one than that, right? There's no other overlay.
I mean, they did submit the PD overlay, and that was the vehicle for it in terms of maybe restricting uses or that. But it could be just a straight CC rezone, and if there's certain uses you want to restrict for a development agreement, we could do it that way too.
Yeah, we have to do a development agreement to transfer development rights.
Right.
That's the one thing we know we have to do. From the standpoint, if there's any uses in the CC zone you really cringe at that you would like us to say not allowed, because we know Mr. Young and his intent and what he plans to build there, but 10, 15 years, if he were to sell the course and someone else chose to do something else in the CC zone that was allowed, that we wouldn't want, now's the time to restrict that. If I believe Mr. Young knows what he wants.
Sure.
We can make sure that's accommodated.
Yeah.
I don't know what that would be, but.
Yeah, they proposed, and that's what we'll be reviewing, what uses they would like to allow in the underlying zone. But again, if there's anything that seems really objectionable to you, please let us know. The agreement has to be finalized for Planning Commission, so that's kind of a change based on state law. So we're trying to work through those issues, but we're waiting to hear your go ahead before we spend too much time on it.
Would you like us to send you a list of the permitted uses in the CC zone?
That would be helpful, because
yeah.
I don't know that we don't know what we don't know.
It's our most permissive commercial zone. So
permissive isn't a word that I associate with South Jordan.
No,
so I don't know what it's worth.
Can you give Doug at least a week advance notice, because we gotta put a stop to these changes, Doug. You've got to say this is it.
So and Ms. Marler, you were there when after the meeting last time we sat down with Mr. Young and the partners. Kirk learned a lot about the proposal.
Yeah.
But when we sat down, we had it all outlined.
Yeah.
And there's a couple things that we kind of misunderstood, and Mr. Marler corrected that, and we all got on the same page. But we had it outlined. It was clear. I think at the end of that meeting, both sides knew clearly the path and what we're doing. And so what we'll do is the same thing on this. And maybe why don't we approach it this way? We'll sit down and do that, and we'll go off of the proposed uses and just limit to what they propose to do, rather than you guys picking through and saying what you don't want from the CC. We'll go with their proposed and then send that to you. And then if you have any issues, you'll see that come through. I doubt you will, because it's exactly what Mr. Young presented. And if that sounds amenable to you, Mr. Young.
That's great.
And Kirk, if that works for you guys, we'll just, does that work for you, Steve? We'll just go from the proposed side rather than flip it. And restrict.
Okay.
So we can do that. We'll set up a meeting. We'll just do what we did last time.
Okay.
It seemed like that went really well.
That went great. Yeah,
okay.
We'll do that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I think we have what we need, and appreciate you and all your work and care for that amazing course and all the folks you're bringing into the city as a result of it. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to say one thing. Your staff has been great to work with. Awesome. Okay. They're very intelligent, and they can. We can get this together, so we're going to get it done before Brad leaves office.
Yeah.
So
that's what Shoreline's next.
All righty, sounds good.
Thanks
you
so
much for your
appreciate
time.
Appreciate you.
Thank you,
guys.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. That's the last item on our agenda. So I will ask, unless anybody has anything else, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn. Do you have anything else? Okay.
That's Tamara's.
Tamara's already adjourned.
I'll make the motion. What am I motioning?
To adjourn.
To adjourn. Meryl, move to adjourn.
Thank you. Can I get a second?
Patrick.
Come on.
Patrick's probably over it. Okay.
Nice.
All
nice.
Right. All of
us people in Chicago.
Yeah. No. How long are you there?
I'm
We fly home tomorrow night.
Oh, I fly there Friday night.
Oh.
Just till Sunday. Yeah. Fast. Like everything, just for 2 seconds. All right. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
We're adjourned.
Aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Thank you.